Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is October 30th, 2019. We have a drizzly, gloomy day here in Nashville. It's been a couple weeks since we last posted a podcast. Beth and I have been traveling over to Eastern North Carolina on a family history exploration. Some of you may remember that last fall I interviewed Adam Akampora. Adam is the executive director of the Tennessee Wine Growers and Producers Association. We talked about the 65 wineries that we have in Tennessee and the struggles that these small operations have producing decent grapes and making wines in our Tennessee climate. On our sojourn over to North Carolina, Beth and I stopped at Goodwater Vineyards, which is near Newport, Tennessee. We had tasted their wine at last year's Sip Tennessee Showcase here in Nashville. Their wine was very good, and I wanted to see the operation firsthand. And so we sat down last week and had a conversation with Laura Poland, who together with her husband Gene and other family members operate the Goodwater Vineyards and Winery. I suppose there is a good bit of nostalgia and glamour associated with winemaking, but I come away from my visit to Goodwater Vineyards with a strong impression of just how challenging these operations are. First, there is the challenge of actually growing a tricky fruit for Tennessee climate. Then there is a challenge of directly marketing their product, negotiating Byzantine rules and regulations, which are designed to essentially put the small operations behind the eight ball. The good news is that through it all, Laura and her family are persevering. Sure, I sure do hope you enjoy my interview with Laura, and I certainly encourage you to try their wines. One note before we start. We recorded this interview in the parlor of their wine tasting facility there at the vineyard. At about 26 minutes into the interview, we were interrupted by a phone call, and so I apologize in advance for my fumbling at editing this interruption out of the recording. Enjoy. Laura Poland, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you.
It's really great for you to make yourself available to speak with me today. And I want to set the scene for our listeners. We are at the edge of Cock County in Greene County, Tennessee, Bybee, Tennessee, or Mosheim, Tennessee?
We are in Mosheim and in Bybee all at once all right. because of the old postal routes, and right. that was a bit of confusion when we laid out where the winery was. The vineyards are in Mosheim. This building is in Bybee.
Okay. But we're in really rural Tennessee
rural.
Out here.
Yes.
It's about 15 miles northeast of Newport, would you say?
Yeah, about 12.
12, mm-hmm. Okay.
Pretty close.
So you all have created a vineyard here and wine production. You've had this in operation for about how long?
About 16 years.
Okay.
Yes. We started growing 2004 and took about 3 years, to get the crops going to be sellable to the market.
All right. So I want to get into a lot of detail about that. Mm-hmm. But I'd like for my listeners to know a little bit about the person that we're speaking with. So tell us about your background.
So I was born in Bristol, Tennessee. I have an older brother. Both my parents are doctors. My mom recently passed away, but she was a local veterinarian and had her own practice here in town. And her name is Carol Hood, and my father is Michael Hood, Dr. Michael Hood. He's a family doctor and still has a practice in Newport. And they started their practices when I was about 3 years old, and we moved to Newport and bought this farm that we live on now and I still live on today. I went to University of Tennessee for language and world business. It was kind of like an international business degree with Spanish major. And started teaching. So my background is mostly in teaching. Actually, okay. I just came from teaching Spanish volunteering at my children's school down the road in Parrotsville. And I really enjoyed that, but I was hoisted into the field of farming after living in Japan for a few years. I was teaching English with the Board of Education in Japan up in Hokkaido. And I really missed home. And my father said, well, that's good because I just planted a vineyard and I need your help managing it.
Fantastic.
And he always loved gardening. Growing up, his mother was an avid gardener and always enjoyed that, and always had a deep interest in wine, and they were lovers of wine, him and mom and my older brother. And we knew a lot about wine, but not about the winemaking or the vineyard growing. So it was quite experimental and still is in some ways.
So your dad purchased this property. Now, when he purchased it, did he have the thought of this was going to be a place I'm going to grow grapes?
Or? He says that now, that he always wanted to have a vineyard and he always wanted to have a winery.
Right.
He has always had a grandiose, you know, plans for, and it is really amazing that it came to fruition, so to speak. But he always wanted to have a vineyard in his retirement and be able to tend to vines. And so it's pretty amazing that it came out to be this the scale that it is. Even though we are a small winery, for us not having that much experience and background in it, we've really grown the business and pretty proud.
So Laura, your husband's also involved in the business.
Yes. So after moving back home from Japan, I started managing the vineyard, and I started taking actually some culinary courses at Walter State in Sevierville so I could add a little something alongside of the agritourism department. You know, with the future plans of having a winery, I started making wine out of the grapes that we were growing in a very small scale, home winemaking scale. And then as I was taking classes, I met my husband out in Sevierville, and we started dating and we started making wine together. And the more wine we made, the more friends we made. And so we said, well, maybe we should, start planning this winery. And fortunately, he had a lot of experience in construction. He was a real estate agent.
Okay.
And he came from Vermont. Grew up snowboarding and went to New York City a lot. And he actually, when he was a server in the city in his younger years, he took the Windows of the World, the restaurant at the top of the Trade Center, he took their wine class seminar. It was like a workshop, about a week long, I guess, and really grew to love the background of wine as well.
Kind of a wine appreciation sort of course.
He really did, and he lived in Italy for a while. He was doing modeling and acting and in Turkey as well as some other countries, but we have a lot of common interests in that traveling, languages, wine. So it's we started planning the winery right away. And you met my Uncle Steve.
Yes.
He's been here since the beginning of the stages of planting. And he came from Nashville, and he's built, he oversaw a lot of the drywalling for these high rises all over the world, and definitely in Nashville and the boom of the building there. And so he was all raring to go and said, let's do it. And so we've actually done in this building, it started out as a 40 by 60 foot building. We did everything from cut the concrete to the roofing to the steel walls in the back. Gene built the glycol system, and he's a very great woodworker as well. And he built this black walnut bar from black walnut
Beautiful.
Tree he cut
yeah.
down and
okay.
milled out himself.
Okay.
So, yep.
So you have how many acres of vines in cultivation here now?
Yeah, so we live on about 180 acre farm, and we have about 30 acres of grapes.
Okay.
And right now we're in the stages of replacing one of the vineyards. So there's always, it's one of the vineyards that was one of the first ones planted, And as I said before, a lot of experimental mm-hmm. things going on. Not sure what varietals needed, you know, were going to be good for us. Not sure exactly what we were doing as far as taking care of them. And then when I came on the scene, I said, we need a consultant.
Okay.
soon as we got the consultant, we were going down the right path. And we planted new vineyards. We ended up with about 30 acres. So
you are they divided out into blocks, or how
yes.
are they organized?
Yes, yeah. we have a white muscadine. We have the native grapes all in one block. Well, kind of one and a half block. And then we have two dry red blocks, and then we have a dry white block.
Okay, so tell us the varieties that you're using.
So we have Treminet, Sauval Blanc, those are whites.
Yeah.
We have Croix Noir and Noray, those are DNA recombinant vines and hybrid vines developed at Cornell University. And Marquette is another dry red. Those Croix Noir and Noray are dry red grapes, and Marquette, dry red. And then we have white Magnolia Muscadine and red Noble Muscadine.
Those being native vines.
And those are the native ones. Right. So there's a big difference in the way you cultivate and take care of all of those vines.
Well, tell us more about that. What is the difference?
So the native vines are my favorite. They're not my favorite to drink, per se.
Right.
But they are we can grow them organically. We do grow them organically. We don't even fertilize that field.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even put organic pesticides in that field or organic fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
This climate is extremely suitable to them. So they're my favorite in that way. I have four children. I don't like chemicals. I don't like them to be on a farm running around. They're constantly biking and running all over this farm.
Right.
So they also don't need as much as when it comes to training them in the trellis system. They grow down instead of up like European varieties. So they look kind of like willow trees. As you saw out here at the winery, they have a top wire trellis system. And a lot of vineyards will use a top wire and let some of their hybrids kind of grow down like that. But really, it's the muscadines that want to grow down and do better in that way. And all the fruit is kind of underneath the vine. So there's not as much tending. It's just the pruning in the winter. And a lot of people do use herbicide intake. You do want to keep the ground clear underneath.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't use herbicide anymore as of last year in any of the vineyards. We got a grant through the Tennessee Agriculture Department, the TAEP grant, to fund our Rhinery cultivator. And it's an Italian machine that cultivates. It has these spinning discs that spin underneath each vine and kind of just break up all the soil and weeds.
So you're cultivating as a weed control type.
As a weed control, right. And it also really helps get nitrogen into the ground.
Yeah, and other... like even moisture into the ground.
Yes,
yeah,
even moisture too.
Exactly. So your hybrid vines that you have and the names that you've given
mm-hmm.
are not names that are going to be familiar to people that are wine
Not at
people.
All. But let me tell you, we have a shop in Gatlinburg and people, many sorts of wine drinkers come through and they see Sauval Blanc. They don't really question it. They just see it's a dry white. Let's try it. Well, that's different than the European white I'm used to.
The name is suggestive
sounds like a
Sauvignon
Blanc.
Is it
nothing like Sauvignon Blanc,
okay.
No. I mean, it is light, but it's more like a Pinot Grigio. It grows like a Chardonnay, though. It puts out a ridiculous amount of fruit to the point that it'll try to kill itself. A lot of secondary fruit can sometimes come out. This year we had less of that, so because we got the drought near the end of the season and they stayed pretty stagnant as far as the secondaries. But sometimes if you have a wet, or even though ironically it was the wettest year in Tennessee, we had a very wet spring, it still dried up enough where the control was better and more fruitful on the fruiting zone.
Right.
So,
and the Traminet sounds like Gewürztraminer.
It is a hybrid of a Gewürz and a Sauval Blanc.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you said those were developed at Cornell.
The Treminet, I'm not sure. Okay. I'd have to look at that. We only have a few Treminet left. We don't have as much, and it's actually not as popular of a wine. It's a semi-sweet, so it just tends to go in that category. Less people right. either tend to like very dry or pretty sweet. But I don't know too much about the Trem. But a lot of people can grow it in Tennessee. It's very sustainable. It has very good yield, and I'd like to put in more, but we have gotten quite a good response with our dry reds, so I'm probably going to boost that and focus more on planting more dry reds.
We tasted a dry red wine here today before we spoke that was named after your mother.
Yeah, Rebecca's Red.
And that the varietal used in that is...
So sometimes we have to change it up depending okay. on the yield of the crop.
Okay.
But generally, it's a lot of Chamberson, and we get that from Parrotsville.
Okay.
So that is a vineyard just 6 miles down the road, mm-hmm. a little Parrotsville vineyard, and they have an awesome yield. So we do about half or more of Chamberson because it is a very rich. Dry red and
it's
has
beautiful wine.
It's a beautiful wine. Has a it oaks very well. It is earthy, kind of rustic, like hybrid reds tend to be. But a lot of people will drink it and think they're drinking a European red. And I tend to anything that's blended with Chamberson, I can tell. But I've been enjoying this latest vintage. So it's about half, we'll have to ask Jean, but about half Chamberson, and then we have a lot of Marquette in there, which is pretty heavy bodied for a hybrid. This was a grape that was developed in Wisconsin. And it
to be hardy for the winters.
Very hardy for the winters, and it comes very early in Tennessee. So anything you pick, you have to understand where it comes from and what climate's meant to grow in. So it's going to come out early. You might likely get a frost. So fortunately, we planted a pretty small block of that so we could kind of control. There's things that you can do in the vineyard for frost preventative, damage preventative. Maintenance, and we just have about 600 vines that we can maintain with that. And the Marquette turned out great this year. So sweet and very big body. So I'm excited to see what it does as a varietal wine for next year.
So do you have plans for expanding beyond the 30 acres that you've got under cultivation now?
Not right now. I am still working on trying to perfect the crops that we have.
Okay. All right.
A lot of that has to do with, we started off with almost 30 acres and none of them really were planted correctly. None of them were really pruned or trained correctly. It was hard. They didn't really know, you know, where to start. And we have an old wooden trellis. It's very romantic if you go in and see, but not super sustainable for the future because the locust posts and everything, they'll hold on for so long, the cedar and locust, but they tend to, with this Tennessee wetness, tend to start keeling over, especially under the heavy weight of some of these vines. So my investment in the future will primarily go to sustain what I have and replant some parts of the old vineyard that need to be retrained. What you really need to do is get the ground base. You need to have it all ripped perfectly.
All right. Well, tell us about that. Now, you've got your orientation to the sun of your fields.
North-facing.
Is north-facing.
Yes.
Okay. And that presents issues. You would prefer to have a south-facing.
Yes.
Orientation.
And that is one of the fields that we need to change the alignment on.
Okay.
So we did on the Sauval Blanc and the new Muscadines that we planted. We turned the trellis around.
Right.
And that's so even though we are north, we can get most of the sunlight if we adjust how
better quality
how
sun.
Where it's where the rows are headed.
Right.
So the one field, it's about 6 acres. We've already started tearing out and we're going to switch the trellis around, and we're going to put in steel post. I highly recommend, if you want to have a vineyard, you get the ground ripped up. And the way we did it, we used this New Zealand method. At first, they just dug a trench. So a lot of our vines have never been very productive, the original vines, and they were root bound. So, and then they were covered with weed mat because they thought, well, this would be a good way to prevent weeds. But then they were mowing, and the mowing clippings were all shooting out in the middle of the rows. Let me tell you, it didn't start off on the right foot at all. So
when you are describing ripping, I think I know what you're talking about. And basically you have a tractor of some sort that's cutting a pretty deep trench through the ground, and disassociating all of the rock and the shale or whatever might be there,
shale,
and kind of mixing it up,
making it reasonably easy to put your 8-foot post down a couple of feet,
right.
So and for your roots to grow
to
out,
to actually
at
spread
least,
out. So,
you know,
yeah.
You should, if you rip it in the manner that we used on the newer fields, we hired a consultant.
Right.
He's an amazing friend of ours, and he suggested this method. Every three feet right. With a 4-foot shank, and I'm talking about a D10 dozer.
Okay.
And not cheap to rent one of these puppies.
Right.
Every 3 feet in 3 different directions.
Right.
It totally shattering the vineyard floor.
Right.
We got about 3 years of growth in 1 year by doing this. We were able to harvest 0.5 ton per acre on the second year by doing that.
And you can do that without really getting a lot of runoff and siltation and
that
sort of thing.
The only problem we really had was our tractors got beat to death. They look like little Tonka toys out there trying to get
it
graded.
But this is a technique that's used all over the world.
Yes.
In growing grapes. And
well, usually there's some sort of trench dug. Maybe not
right.
Every 3 feet in 3 different directions.
Right.
It's kind of extreme, but I tell you, it made a difference. And then we laser planted those and had a much better exactness than the other fields, the previous fields.
It makes it easier to use machinery. Is that the reason for that?
Yes, width going down each row, knowing how much room you have to turn around at the end of the rows, and counting the vines and keeping everything in order, it does make it a lot easier.
So growing grapes in Tennessee, we've said, I guess, already that because of the high humidities, it presents issues in the summertime.
Mold.
Yeah. And so with your non-native grapes, you are having to do some spraying.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So we will never, ever be able to call ourselves an organic vineyard because our blocks are too close together they're too close to the our native grapes. So if we spray fungicide in our Sauvignon Blanc field.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, would automatically negate any sort of organic claim to our Muscadine wines, unfortunately. But we still tell people, you know, we explain to them, not only is this Muscadine wine, you know, grown with no chemicals, but it's also extremely high in resveratrol, and some studies have shown the highest resveratrol of any grape in the world. It's heart healthy, and we ferment on the skins for a couple of days, and the color contact's amazing. It's with being very smooth too. So that's been, one thing that we try when people come to the tasting room. Yes, they'll see the list and they may have not heard of these kinds of grapes because I don't like to name a lot of wineries, you know, enjoy it and people love fancy names, but like Sunrise Wine or, you know, like naming a fanciful name to a wine. If I can grow a varietal wine and it's 100% that grape, I will call it that wine. So our Sauvignon Blanc is our dry white. It's not knock your socks off. It's your basic table white, but it's nice. Has enough sharpness for food pairing and people dig it, you know, especially if they're here in Tennessee and they're trying wines and all they're tasting is sweet wines all day. It's nice to have something a little more like real wine. Just
All right. Well, let's change directions just a minute now. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the production of wine and the creation of the vineyard and all that. Now, you are making a lot of wine. Mm-hmm. Then the issue is, how do you market your wine? And yeah. You are here in a very remote place.
Yes.
And, you know, you can get here easily, but it you have to purposely want to come here.
Yes, it's been vineyard. A struggle for sure. And so fortunately, we have had some good calls, litigation-wise, to get satellite stores and self-distribution passed in Tennessee for small businesses like ours. So we took advantage of self-distribution at first, and we...
Now, what does that mean?
It means I can sell my wine directly to a company, to a restaurant, to a... So we had our wines, before we had any remote locations like we do now, we had our wines at the Smokies Baseball Stadium, and we had a little bar we made set up there and just really enjoyed that. We sold cases and cases a week to them, and it was great coverage, and a lot of people came out to the winery from that. We had our wines in some of the nicer restaurants in Knoxville, Sunspot, Bistro by the Tracks, and those such. We kind of started off with that, but then when they passed... satellite stores, we were the fifth. I think we're the fifth license to sign up. Unfortunately, we're still a little bit backwards in the wine law area.
In Tennessee, you're speaking of.
Yeah, okay. They wouldn't allow you to have both. You can't have a self-distribution license and have a remote location. Okay. They want you to go through a distributor. All right. And you had to have a distributor just to send your wine to your remote location. So I had to pay a distributor. Now that's next. We don't have to do that anymore, but it was kind of ridiculous. Okay. So I have two. I've had two. I just one is more of a summer business in Hartford, Tennessee, where all the rafting and the Smokies is. But we recently closed that because we opened a store in Gatlinburg almost a year ago, and it's just blown everything out of the water. So you have, it's location, location, location. If you have the rural location like this, you definitely want to pursue the wine drinkers, the people that are experienced with wine. Get out, get on TripAdvisor, get known, get people like you to come out and discuss, you know, what makes you unique, and they will find you. And especially if you have a sign on the interstate, we're not too far from the, we are kind of far, but we're almost at the limit, 13 miles.
Right.
But those kind of people that buy a case of wine, like when they come out to the winery, they will go off the beaten track. So even some days in Gatlinburg where it's just tons of walk-in traffic and we're just selling wine left and right, we're just selling a bottle here, a bottle there, maybe a few bottles. But when people come out here, they're buying significantly more because they're really into
our wine.
Isn't
that interesting? Yeah. I want to go back to this business of what is our state policy and what our legislators need to know. I mean, we have... With your operation, you're in, there's like 60 others around the state of people trying to grow grapes. Some better than others, certainly, no question. But, you know, they've put up barriers.
Yes, and what's sad is it's mostly conflicted for people like us that we're kind of small-time farmers. 30 acres is a lot of vines, but it's... We're a family business.
It's a family farm.
And most
it's an agricultural
business. It's an agricultural business. And most of the big players, they... Let me get...
So you were talking about the struggles with dealing with state regulations.
Yes. We, as a... Most of the 60 that have vineyards are family businesses. And most of them... have a lot of connections with restaurants and other small businesses that would love to carry their wine. And they can't get the distribution permit if they have another little remote location for their winery. And that's just, it makes no sense. We shouldn't have to go through a distributor.
So Laura, if I'm a farmer and I'm growing corn and I want to sell fresh corn to a local restaurant in Nashville, I can do that directly.
I believe so.
Yeah. But you can't do, you're raising a crop here, you're making a product, and you can't sell it directly to a restaurant in Nashville.
No. And they'll say it's because of it's alcohol and more highly regulated. And yes, okay, but it's really because the distributors want to have their part of it.
Yes, well, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Let's, and we're going to close up here in just a second, but I wanted to just talk with you just a moment about what are the tastes that people have for wine today? How is that changing?
Yes.
You're a person, obviously, you've told us that you've traveled a good bit around the world. You've been to other places where wine is more part of the culture. Tell us about Tennessee, people's taste in Tennessee. What are they buying? What are they telling you they're interested in?
Well, so you're in the South, and we like sweet tea.
Okay.
So, and many people in the South that were raised here have had family members that have made wine. And they've usually made wine from grapes that were native to this area, like muscadines or some maybe some scuppernogs or some Labrusca grapes like Concord.
Right.
You know, things that they didn't have to tend as heavily as these very time-consuming European or hybrid grapes. So they tend to like the sweeter wines. And I'll tell you something interesting about the muscadine. And a lot of people don't really understand this, but the muscadines, they say, oh, they're very sweet. I don't want to taste that wine. I just don't like, you know, that. And what they think is that the grapes are sweet, and that's why the wine's sweet. Well, the opposite is the case. They have a lot of acidity. They have a lot of bitterness in the skins, and usually to balance out a wine at the end, if you just throw some sugar in it, it'll make it more balanced tasting and a little more palatable.
Right.
So you can make a dry muscadine. It's not as appealing. I've made some before that were quite smooth, but generally people are used to that sweeter taste. So newer wine drinkers, there are a lot of new wine drinkers these days, especially when you're in tourist communities like Gatlinburg and everybody's doing free tastings so they can come and for the first time they're trying wines. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard, well, I've never really liked wine before, but I really like these. And they'll tend to go for the sweeter wines first because you're not going to taste the alcohol as strong, and they wince a whole lot when they taste the dry ones. It's a, you know, it's that kind of palate you grow towards.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the, I guess I would say people that are in their 30s is a very large market. They're learning quickly about wines because there are so many, every state, like everybody that comes to me says their state is, wineries and vineyards are popping up everywhere from Indiana down to, maybe not Florida, not as far south as there, but Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, of course. There's so many of us that are new in this field. And so, of course, a lot of people are joining wine clubs. A lot of people have a winery down the road that they go to. And people are becoming more knowledgeable and are appreciative. I find my customers in Gatlinburg, I'm a little off the beaten track in Gatlinburg too. I'm not one of the big guys up on the strip. I'm a little bit in like one of those little walking malls.
Okay.
So it's a little more intimate. It's a big space, but a little more intimate tasting. One person can run it and spend, you know, significant time explaining about the wines and where they come from. And
do you spend a lot of time there yourself?
Oh, yes. Now that all my children are in school, I have a kindergartner finally is in school, so I get to be there.
Okay.
And control that aspect there. Every weekday, I'm there every morning.
My goodness.
Yeah. It's our commute, but it's to the beautiful Smokies, so I don't mind. It's nice.
So, Laura, if our listeners want to know more about you, your vineyard, and what you're doing, how do they tune into what you all are doing here?
Well, good news is we just revamped our webpage. So in about a week, goodwatervineyards.com will be up. A great company out of Knoxville, Slamdop, helped arrange this. And we have an Instagram feed right on the front page. You can see what our wines are for sale. You can buy them from there. And we have a blog So we'll be talking about things in the vineyard, you know, what's going on in the winery, what's going on in Gallenberg, different events and festivals. So there's so many facets of this operation, and it's multi-generational. That's the one thing that we're so proud of.
So goodwatervineyards.com.
Yes, goodwatervineyards.com.
Okay. All right. So I know that the Tennessee Wine Growers has got an event coming up in Nashville again in November this year.
Yes, and we actually have a very big event that's not through TFWA, but it's with our Nine Lakes. It's called Lakeside of the Smokies Balloon Fest, and Nine Lakes of East Tennessee is a group that was formed just within the last year or so, and Middle Tennessee and East Tennessee wineries are involved in this. There'll be about 20 of us at a wine garden at this balloon festival in White Pine, Tennessee. I'll be one of the closest wineries to this festival. It's next weekend, October 26th and 27th. And into the evening, we'll be tasting wine and doing balloon rides. And there's all sorts of fun wine festivals out there. So if you just follow Tennessee Wines on Instagram or any of these Tennessee-sponsored wine events, there you'll see that we are prevalent. We are out there. We are showcasing our farm-grown products, and we invite everyone to come try.
Laura, thank you so much for visiting with me today. It's been a joy to talk with you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.